This is the final Fujay podcast from 2024 with some more Java insights from JFO.
Welcome to the Fujay podcast, all your news about OpenJDK.
Let's wrap up this year with some more interviews from the JFO conference. In this episode, you'll hear Paulien van Alst, Lutske de Leeuw and Johan Hutting about JUG Nord. Stefan Norberhuis helps companies with infrastructure as code. Anthony Goubaar about desktop application development with Java. Gintje Terschuur shares what he learns from conferences and his talk about code reviews. Hanno Embrechts tells us more about Project Loom and structured concurrency. And Natalia Giobenko about GVM internals and what you can learn from writing your own programming language. Let's start with the Fujay master himself, Geert-Jan Willinga. Maybe you're listening or watching this podcast but didn't visit the Fujay website yet. Geert-Jan explains the goals of the Fujay project, the future plans and how you can join as a contributor. I started with asking Geert-Jan which are the most important topics to keep an eye on in the OpenJDK world.
There are so many, but definitely performance and security are top of mind, I think, for many large organizations. So those are clearly topics of interest, and many of the presentations here today are around that. But I think your favorite topic, JavaFX, is super important as well, because there are all these, you know, large organizations you don't really know much about, you don't hear about, but behind the scenes are doing all kinds of desktop work. And so JavaFX is also super important. So yeah, I mean, all the standard topics are of relevance and are represented here really well at JFO today.
For the people who don't really know Fujay, yes, can you explain the goal of the website and all the things you're doing?
Yes. Well, I think you should see Fujay as your reliable place to go for daily information around Java. It's a community platform. It's a website. It's a Slack channel. And you can participate and share your insights and your tips and tricks and you know, your own tutorials. You can republish your own blog content. It's a gathering place. It's a water hole for anyone using Java or any OpenJDK-based language such as Kotlin as well. And we've been around almost 5 years now and going strong. Many organizations are showing interest and signing up and participating in the advisory board. We have this wonderful podcast that just keeps going, and there's more and more content. We're promoting a lot of JUGs, JUG content. Yeah, it's just the ecosystem's place to go for information, insights, and enthusiasm.
And a clear message to the community: you can join Fujay, you can cross-post your blog post, you can join the podcast if you have an interesting topic. So that's also an important message.
Yes, it's a collaborative platform. It's for the community, by the community. So anyone can sign up. It's simply on the site. It's simply a WordPress site. So you get a user login, and you just go in there. You queue up your content. Every Monday morning, we take a look at what's there, and we propose a schedule for the week. In the Slack, we say, hey, you know, this is what's in draft. We propose the following sequence. Here are the topics. Here are the articles, and people can agree or disagree. And people discuss this different channels for different JUGs. Yeah, so it's really participative, collaborative, something that we all do together. And, you know, you can see that in other communities. I mean, Python has its own clear website for Python, its own channels and so on, and other languages. And that's really what Fujay aims to be for the, especially the Java language.
I met my next guest, Natalia Giobenko, for the first time at the Utrecht JUG some time ago. She was a speaker at a few of the previous JFO editions, and one of her talks was about the language she developed herself on top of the JVM and what she learned during that process and how it also influenced her career. What does she want to learn from a conference?
I actually come to JFO for a couple of years now, and these days it's more for networking, like meeting friends and people, communicating with all the other wonderful speakers that are here. And watching some talks, of course, because I really have something already in mind that I would like to watch. Just enjoy the day and enjoy JFO today.
So today you're a visitor, enjoying the talks, but you were a speaker here a few years ago, or twice, I think, even. What were your topics?
I was talking about some Java under the hood. So my first talk was actually about creating a JVM language. that I created for fun. I actually wanted to figure out how Java bytecode works, what it is. I figured that I actually didn't know what it looked like. So I decided to take a look, and somehow I ended up building my own programming language. And it was generating the bytecodes. And when you generate the bytecode, you need to understand what this all operations do, how it all functions, and how does it look under the hood in each moment of the time. So I had to learn on that. And then I thought, okay, I can actually share this with other people, what I learned. And this is how my first talk was born. And then actually it was like a snowball coming from there, because people were asking questions. And I was like, oh yeah, it's interesting to know about this as well. So this is how other talks were born as well.
So people may not realize, so if you have Java codes and you run Java C, you end up with bytecodes. But the same kind of bytecode is generated by other languages, like I think Kotlin, Scala, they also do the same. So what you did was write another language in the family of Java, Kotlin?
It was another JVM language. So it looked exactly the same as Java bytecode under the hood, just a different compiler, yeah. I believe Kotlin looks similar under the hood, but about Scala it's hard to say for me because they have a lot of scary stuff.
Did you have a fancy name for the language?
I called it Mova. It's this means the language in Ukrainian, my native language.
That's a nice name. And is it used? Do you use it yourself for some development?
I had an idea that it can be used by people who are not very technical, so it could be written as natural language sentences, but I guess now it's no longer relevant. No, I don't use it myself. It was just for fun project, and I have actually not touched it since, maybe only for like small other pet projects, but that was just a fun project.
It's really fun that you wrote your own language. I know one presenter we had, I think at DevOx, who wrote the Rockstar language.
I don't know that one, but I also know about annotation based language. Actually was the presentation today, I think, in the early bird sessions. I have seen it before, but it was also crazy and super cool, also like cool experiments like that.
So you wrote your compiler to convert your language to bytecode. What did it learn you about how Java works or the JVM?
It learned me about why certain things look like they do, like certain constructions on the higher level, and how maybe different formulations and different pieces of code can translate into a very simple, small thing, and maybe about some things that you can, depending on how you write it, it can be interpreted a little differently. And just gave me a little bit more of insight on why certain decisions in the language were being made, and this kind of small things. But mainly, how Java actually executes the how JVM executes the program, how it interprets it, and then I also, of course, started learning more about JIT compiler. Like I didn't really implement anything like that yet, or whatsoever, but it was still very interesting to look into it a bit.
Is it something as a Java developer you should do, look into how the JVM works, or can you just go with the day job and use Java as the language, or can it help you to make more performant applications?
To be honest, I think it didn't influence me for a long time. I didn't know how the bytecode looked like, and I was doing my job, and it was okay. It's not like it influenced a lot of my daily work. But if you are more interested in this domain, or you're actually working with more lower level things, then you, of course, it will benefit you a lot if you know that. So it's not something that I expect every developer to know, but I think they might be interested or curious, and it might give you like just more understanding and appreciation of the language you're using.
It was a pet project for you, I guess. It was not part of your job. So you became a speaker because of it. How did it influence your career or what you have been doing since then?
It's influenced it in a way that I was speaking a bit more after that, because as I said, it's a snowball that keeps pulling one thing after another. But as I mentioned, I was really into the domain, and probably because of the networking and talking with other people who thought, oh, that's so cool, and maybe connecting with people on the subject, this is how I found my current job, which is actually in the domain that I'm really interested in. So that is super cool, I think, how this community, this networking can drive you to the point where you actually want to be.
So you're now working at Azul. Yeah. Your current job is inside the GVM. What do you do now?
It's how to say, I'm a backend engineer. I'm working in intelligence cloud team. So it's some cloud solutions that help developers. But it's not like I'm actually doing a lot of low level work right now, but still I the insights that I have about how JVM works and what JVM does, they really much help me to understand the domain, because still I need to use these terms, use this information to communicate with other teams that do actually lower level things like the agent guys. So it does help me a lot, and it's more of a connecting what I'm used to doing a lot, so backend work, with my interest, which is JVM and all this internal stuff.
Just like the previous years, Hanno Embrechts visited JFOL as a speaker and asked him what his talk this year was about.
I did a talk on Project Loom, but not the virtual threads part. I did an intro, but the focus was on structured concurrency and scoped values, which is the work that's being done because virtual threads are now available. So I did an introduction, did a few live demos. Yeah.
Project Loom, virtual threads. We talked about this OpenJDK project before. These projects, they go into different versions of Java because of JEPs. So you can have still evolutions within these projects. So Project Loom is still evolving?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It one of the first deliverables was virtual threads, became final in Java 21, and still parts of the project are being released to the newer Java version. So structured concurrency and scoped values was one of them, and those features are being re-previewed in 23 and also 24, probably, based on the feedback they get from developers and a few API changes, like it goes with all JEPs, I guess. So, okay, yeah.
Virtual threads. What should I use them for?
So any place where you would use regular threads right now, but you are seeing a lot of waiting time on I/O. So you're calling a database or an external service. You can improve those situations with virtual threads, because the waiting and the blocking part of the classic threads is being swapped out when you use virtual threads, because they don't block the classic threads anymore. Right, the blocking part is done in the virtual thread, but that's a JVM-only construct. So the actual OS threads are no longer being blocked. And if those periods of time are quite large, then you will get a much better performance out of that. So also, you can also conclude if your problem is CPU-based, yes, so you've got large computations that take a long time, virtual threads won't add the performance there, because there are no blocking waiting times.
So if I do API calls and I'm waiting for an answer, or I'm loading database content, that's when virtual thread can help.
Yeah, that's exactly the situation, yeah.
But indeed, they are not the solution for everything.
No. Actually, if you would try to use them for CPU intensive work, probably they will be a bit slower, because there's a scheduling step involved. The virtual thread has to be scheduled to run on a platform thread, and that's some overhead that you're not getting the time back, right, with CPU intensive tasks. So yeah.
Your talk, was it again with the guitar?
I do a lot of talks with guitars. This talk wasn't about music, but I've done an extra talk, the Ignite sessions during this day, that was about music, together with Marit van Dijk from JetBrains. And we did just a fun talk about how you can sing the words public static void main to a number of songs. And we just played a few songs and let the audience guess which songs we were playing. So I'm not sure they learned anything from it, other than that we pointed out that public static void main is going to be void main, right, from Java 23 and onwards. So we said, like, we have mixed feelings about this JEP, right, because it undermines the idea for our talk. But overall, I'm happy with that JAP actually, because it helps people who are learning Java to skip some of the more confusing concepts and just immediately go to a main method that they can write. So overall, it's a good addition, I think.
So it's one of the many evolutions in Java. You also talked about virtual threads. What are some of the other main topics in Java evolutions that we should be following?
There's so much stuff happening right now. I have been very interested in the pattern matching side of things, but overall everything that comes out of that project, Project Ember, is really interesting because it immediately influences the language and how we use it. So that's an interesting tangent to discover and research. I'm also quite excited about the new ideas for the new serialization feature, or as they call it, marshalling now. Which also will use elements from pattern matching. So, for example, deconstruction patterns that you can define in a class to configure how a class is deconstructed. First, that feature needs to be available in Java, so that will take probably another one or two versions. And then afterwards, that will pave the road for a new version of serialization. And that's a very exciting, at least I'm very interested in it, because this is also one of the areas where Java doesn't have the best image, and I think I would really want to see that image improved, and I think the marshalling endeavor can really help there.
Yeah, it's one of the things that Java evolves slowly, although we have this 6 month release cycle. But on the other hand, it's nice that you mentioned it. So this pattern matching, the way they implement it already envisions other changes within the JDK. So it's really important how one change influences another.
Yeah. And I liked the way that they coordinate these changes amongst each other. So there has gone many thought in, let's introduce it now, and let's introduce the following feature after that, so that we can build towards something else that is then released based on the right foundations. And I think that's a very clever process, yeah.
Hinsje ter Schuur is another regular conference visitor and speaker. I talked with him about what you can learn from a conference and his talk about code reviews.
The JFOL is like a great community event, which I go to basically every year, or at least when I'm able to. So
We met before at another conference. There we were a speaker. Not today, I think.
No, today I'm not speaking. I'm just attending the conference. There are a lot of great sessions, actually too much to choose from, basically.
What sessions are you focusing on today? What's the main topic you want to learn today?
I typically don't have a main topic. I try to go to diverse topics. So technical ones, like maybe the geeky ones, and also the more like soft skill style. So I like the diversity.
Can we go back to your talk the last time? What was it about?
So last time I did a talk about code reviews and some best practices around code reviews.
Some highlights that you can say, what is important if you go to a code review? If I have to review the code of my colleague, do I have to be polite? What are the things I have to take care of?
Of course you have to be polite, but it works. So it starts with the basics, like use the word we, for example, instead of saying you. That really helps. Request something, not demand, like, okay, it must be done, but okay, should we do it like this and this and this? And it's also important when asking for a review that you're also open to feedback and realize that it's about the code and it's not about you. Although sometimes it can feel like you put a lot of effort into that code and it's like maybe your baby, and then it feels really personal if you get comments or critique about stuff. So if you realize that beforehand and you're open to comments, that really helps.
I read a few articles about a code review is actually too late. It's better to go into an approach of pair programming so that what needs to be reviewed was actually already reviewed. Is that a better approach according to you?
Yeah, it also, of course, depends on what you try to achieve with the code review. So I think to get the code out, I think pairing could be good. But you can also have like knowledge sharing is an important thing with code review. So you could do that in a pair, then you have some knowledge sharing, but then you run the risk of being having the same tunnel vision, basically. So then a fresh pair of eyes could really help there. But then the code review is different, less on specific details, but more on more high over. So then you have a different review. So I think that's probably a better model, but that's not always possible.
Okay, so again, it depends, and a combination is probably the best solution.
I would say so, yeah.
As Geert-Jan said in the first interview in this podcast, Java is also used a lot in companies to build user interface applications. JavaFX is only one option to do that. Anthony Hubar has a long list of such applications created with Swing.
I started Swing in, I think, in 1998, so I'm quite used to it now. Yeah, so you have look and feel compared to JavaFX, where you're more, it's more like CSS with JavaFX look and feels. Then Swing, you also have a lot of resources online for components that you have also now more also with JavaFX. So yeah, I'm also more used to it. And I think one of the advantages of Swing is that it's also included with standard Java release. So with JavaFX, you have more to integrate it, and then you have different things for macOS and for Linux and so on. So, but I'm used to Swing, so as there's nothing wrong with Swing, I'm still continuing with Swing. That's why.
Can you a bit promote your own product? So you have a lot of different applications. What are the most important or popular ones?
Yeah, so all my applications are free to download, and a lot of them are freeware. Some of them are free to try the rest. So go to japiz.com. So I have a file manager, very for more also mostly for developers, with a lot of features like with integration with Git and things like this. I have also some image editor, like decoration, pastel, poster fonts that you can also have very beautiful fonts to create logos and things like this. I have a text toolbox that's called a Japiz toolbox to do text manipulation that I often need to do, for example, checking regular expression, things like this as a developer. So for example, I have also written a plugin for IntelliJ, Eclipse, and NetBeans that basically will start your own application as an applet inside the IDE. So applets are used to work in browsers, so now they just start inside your IDE. So recently, for example, I integrated with JavaFX, so now if you have a JavaFX application, you can run it inside your IDE without doing too many changes. At least you don't need to change the code. You need to write like maybe an applet.html or GNLP file, but and then it will start inside the IDE. And this can also work, of course, with Swing applications. And so all these kind of different tools.
Stefan Norberhuis was looking for a solution to make it easier to manage an AWS system as a Java developer. To achieve this, he founded Rocket Leap,
which is a new product based on AWS CDK, where you can build your AWS platform very easily, accelerate your development, and fix problems with security and scalability. And the cool thing about AWS CDK is that it transpiles to other languages. So one of the languages is Java. So Java developers can natively build infrastructure code using Java. So they don't have to leave their environment. They know how it works. So they don't also need to learn a new language. That's why I'm at JFall.
Infrastructure code, you mean setting up servers, networks, stuff like that?
Yeah, everything that you need to configure in AWS can be done with AWS CDK. And we build a product for that, and you can use Java to configure it. Yeah.
So you're running Java in the cloud. There has been a lot of discussion about Java. It was not designed for the cloud. It didn't exist yet. Is Java a good citizenship for the cloud?
So you have multiple components. Infrastructure as code is more declarative. It runs not in the cloud, but you run it once, and you have like a Java bytecode, a template of how you want to configure your cloud. There it works fine. It is a bit heavy in syntax, but running Java inside the cloud, it's a bit memory heavy, but you can just configure your resources to use more memory. And then if it works, it works perfectly fine. And there used to be also a time where Lambdas actually have an advantage using Java because you have snapstart. So you can copy your memory and then it starts with that copy of the memory.
So you're here at the Java conference. How do Java developers look at infrastructure? Is it something they like?
Yeah, so that's also one of the questions I wanted to answer at this conference. I think there is still a big gap between the DevOps people, which are mostly focused on the ops, and the developers. And for me, my personal journey was also, I am a developer myself from my background, but the more I dived into AWS, I found that I can solve problems more easily using the services that AWS provides, where I can build more scalable, more reliable, more observable, if I invest more in the knowing about the infrastructure. And that's also what I want to bring with Rocket Leap, my product, to allow developers to easily take control and own their own services instead of it's someone else's job. That the whole DevOps cycle of building, deploying, testing, and owning it is doable in one team.
You talk a lot about AWS. Is it a problem of buying in that you get locked to the services of a certain provider? Of course, not only AWS, Google, others. If you select one of these platforms, are you stuck with them forever, or is it still easy to evolve or combine it with others?
A very good question. I think the industry right now is at a point where if you stick with one, the return on investment is always bigger if you stay with the same vendor, and switching is really hard. I did some preparations for migrating, and there's no benefit in migrating to other clouds. It takes a lot of work, a lot of experience is also acquired over the years, so you have to restart that journey. So now it's really like, if you pick one, you should stick with it. And it is a bit of vendor lock-in, but the prices are not really different between clouds, except for on-premise. So the answer is yes, you are locked in.
Are locked in, but it brings you a lot of benefits at the same time.
Yeah, I really believe if you if you're a small company, you should accept this and then also dive deep into it, because then you get more benefit. If you don't do it and you're scared of vendor lock-in, then it becomes more painful.
Isn't the problem of these cloud providers also that they have so much services that you can choose from, and then they all have this specialty and then one specific function they provide? Is it difficult to keep up with what they provide?
Yeah, I struggle with that myself as an AWS expert. Keeping up with all the new releases is hard, so it's also not doable to do multiple clouds.
To conclude the interviews of the JFall conference, I have three guests at the same time who came to the Fuji booth to introduce a new Java user group.
I'm Lutke Leeuw.
I'm Johan Hutting, and I'm going to talk.
And I'm Paulien van Oost.
One speaker badge, one programming committee, but you are here together because one special reason?
We are from Jug Noord, the newest Jug in the north of the Netherlands.
Can I say that the Netherlands is the most active JUG country?
Give or take. I think Germany is also doing quite well, but we're coming along.
But the Netherlands is smaller, so maybe in average we have...
Way more density.
Okay. A new JUG, so did you already have an event or...?
Yes, we already had two events in September and October, and our next event is next Thursday, actually, next week. So we have a monthly meetup. That's the plan now.
A monthly meetup. So a lot of pressure finding guests, finding venues, or do you have a fixed venue?
Well, we have two venues, one with ING Leeuwarden and one with Dio in Groningen. So hence also the North. We are trying to cater to people in the northern provinces. And we do have the location, so we can actually come people, invite them in, they know where to go.
But you're also involved in the new Vox Days, correct?
Yes, I'm from Vox Days Amsterdam. That's the new DevOps in Amsterdam. And hopefully in a couple of years, the new DevOps Amsterdam, yes.
So a very vibrant community. This event is organized by the NLJUG. So how did you compare NLJUG versus your JUG? Is it a different type of organization or a different ID?
It's a smaller community, of course, because it's regional. And what we also aim to be is like a step up for beginning speakers to have a podium to try out their talks. And then maybe end up here someday. So, yeah, it's on a smaller scale. Yeah.
Yeah, so people who want to start as a speaker, a JUG is really something where you should start or where you can learn it?
It's a good start because it's a small community and small audience. So it's very easy and good going to start your career there.
Okay. We have one speaker, which is a speaker today because I know. what is your talk about?
Open sourcing a library. How hard can that be?
It can be hard. There are quite some challenges. What are the challenges? Let's start with that.
What are the challenges? Well, people were telling me it's incredibly hard. Don't do it. But then I started, okay, I want to see how hard it is. And it turns out nowadays it's fine. And that's what my talk is about, but also covering what are you running into as a developer or as someone who wants to open source a library, because there's challenges there.
Becoming part of the open source community, I think for most of the people here, it's either something they dream of, but on the other hand, it's quite simple. You can just start talking to people here or at the JUG.
Just open source code and just upload it to GitHub, it's already open source. Yeah. But we want a community as well, and community building is also creating a JUG, having people speak, sharing knowledge, and I think that's also what's part of open source.
If someone wants to start becoming a speaker, he lives close to you, what should they do?
They should go to meetup.com and look for JUG Noord, and then contact, press the button, and all of us get an email, and we can get in contact with you.
You also do something like shorties, quickies?
Yeah, now we have always two speakers a night, but we also want to change that and do quickies and stuff. But that really depends on the speakers and how much we have to build up on.
Something you learned today that you didn't know yet about Java? There are too many talks because they have 8 talks at the same time, I guess.
Yeah.
So hard to choose.
Yeah, and it's also a community event, so you also want to network with people and stuff, and they're recorded so we can see them later on the talks.
I heard this before. I don't come to the conference for the talks. I come for the community. Is that always also the case?
Partially. Last year I visited 3 talks and I just talked the entire day with other people. But yeah, that's what it is. You meet a lot of interesting people. You learn some new stuff. I didn't learn anything new about Java today, but one of my colleagues was having a talk about organizing coding events to have some competition with people. It was quite interesting to watch.
That's it for this year. See you in 2025 for more OpenJDK news. Thanks for listening or watching, and thanks to my guests, of course. Keep an eye on Fuji for future articles and podcasts about development and everything related to the Java world. See you!
Give me a Foo! Give me a J, give me the friends of OpenJDK.